Lori Kessa, Bill Keys, Ruth Roberts, and Johnny Houston Jr. Restrooms are down the hall on the right as you exit this room. There's childcare available across the hall if you want to take advantage of that. There are also snacks at the back of the room. Please help yourselves. There's literature tables around the room if you're interested in more information.
Thanks, Jill. One more time, if everybody from the Northside Planning Council and the Northside PTO Coalition could please stand just so they can be recognized. As Jill said, my name is Dave Cohen. I'm the co-president of the Northside PTO Coalition. I want to just give you a little background on our PTO Coalition and what we do. We represent 12 schools in the East High attendance area, and the main themes that we've worked on for the past 3.5 years have been related to equity and also accountability of the district to the public. And even though we represent the North and East sides most directly, these issues of equity and accountability are really relevant to all of our schools and all the taxpayers. In terms of equity, our main focus has been working to ensure that resources are allocated based on need, and that students who are have most need get the most resources. And some of the ways we've done that is we've examined some of the real and perceived differences between how East side and west side schools function. And also we've worked on things like protecting supplemental allocations in the equity resource formula. And also we're currently involved in helping the district to rewrite their equity policy. One thing I want to make real clear is that we don't take sides on any electoral issues, whether they're elections or referenda. In fact, as a coalition, we often don't have a consensus on something like a referenda. We do represent a diverse perspective, and thus we decided to hold this debate so that you can get some of these diverse perspectives. And now Jill's going to explain a little bit about our format tonight.
Thanks, Dave. I'm just going to go through this quickly. We're going to start the evening with an informational presentation by Superintendent Art Rainwater. He's going to talk about the three questions and explain why we're going to referendum and how that may affect your taxes if they're passed. Next, we're going to have CARES and Get Real explain their positions to you. CARES will be represented by Arlene Silvera, and Get Real is being represented by Kirby Brandt. After that, both CARES and Get Real have the opportunity to ask three questions. And let's see. You have, on your chair, you had an agenda and the three questions and room to take notes on those questions. After that, we have an opportunity for two-minute public statements. There's also a registration form on your chair. If you wish to make a two-minute public statement, you can register. We're limiting it to the first 10 that submit their registrations, just to keep it with the timeline. After that, we're going to do questions from the audience. Again, you have a green piece of paper for questions. When you write your question down, make sure you mark who it's being addressed to, and you can hold your question up and a volunteer will come and collect it. And then after that, we'll have a brief closing statement from each group.
Now, we realize that there's some very contentious issues here tonight, and we'd like to make this a constructive debate. So I'd like to ask everybody to please be very respectful of our panelists and any audience members. And we're going to start with Superintendent Art Rainwater, who's going to introduce the three referenda questions and the justification for them and the impact that each will have on our taxes.
Let me get geared up here.
Oh, Art, that's mine.
That's yours.
That's mine.
Sorry.
I'm off to a great start, huh?
Thank you.
I could probably do this without the mic, but if you've been an old high school principal and you learn to project your voice, or you get nothing done. My task this evening is to really go through the three questions with you, to provide the information about what they say, kind of how they were arrived at. I always give a disclaimer in this kind of situation because of my position. It's necessary that I only provide information, so I will be glad to answer any questions that they allow me time for. This is a very tight schedule. At the end, about the information that I present. Let me start with referendum question number one. And this is not the exact wording. I didn't try to put the legal wording here. But referendum question number one authorizes the district to spend $14.5 million to construct a second school on the Leopold Elementary School site and remodel the current building. And not to make the presumption that everyone knows where Leopold is, but it serves the south part of our school district, which is primarily a third of the city of Fitchburg. And this would build a second school on the same site as the current Leopold School. We have a very large piece of land there, and it lends itself to adding a second school. It's needed because Leopold is currently overcrowded, and it's an area of the city that over the next 4 to 5 years will be experiencing some pretty rapid growth. We have areas there that are planted already that will yield an additional 100 kids, and there's a very large area that will come under development over the next 3 to 5 years that will yield more children, and Leopold is currently overcrowded. Because of the geography of Leopold's location and the way our school district is geographically in that area, it's very difficult to move those students to other schools in the school district. Also, our district has tried as much as possible to have schools close to where children live. And so building the second school in the Leopold area meets those criteria, and we believe will serve that population for the foreseeable future. The cost to the taxpayer, and when we talk about an average property owner in Madison, it's at the time we constructed this referendum was $205,000 was the median price home. Of course, as it always happens, about 2 or 3 weeks after we put our information together, the city came out with a new median price, but we're using $205,000. The average cost for that property owner with a $205,000 home is $25 a year for 15 years. This would be built with a 15-year bond. Referendum question number two would allow the Madison Metropolitan School District to exceed the state revenue cap by $7.4 million. The district currently has a gap between our cost to continue budget, or what it would cost us to do the same thing next year, and our revenue cap of $8.6 million. Our board has agreed to cut $1.2 million worth of services regardless of what happens with the referendum. So the referendum is asking to exceed the revenue cap by $7.4 million. I would like to walk through with you how the revenue cap impacts our budget. This is an attempt to make a very complex formula very simple. So, first of all, the ceiling on what we can spend is the revenue cap. It was passed in 1993 by the state legislature. And basically what they did was they froze every school district in Wisconsin's per pupil expenditure at the 1993 rate. And then the legislature has allowed your ability to spend to go up by a set amount of money. So, and that is based on the 3-year rolling average of your enrollment. So you take 3 years, add it up, add up the numbers, divide them by three, and you get a 3-year rolling average. That number of students is multiplied times the per pupil cost. And I'll kind of walk through that with you. In 2004-2005, our revenue cap expenditures per pupil, this year we're in right now, is $9,441.97. By statute, it is allowed to grow by $245.11. In the case of our budget, that's 2.6%. That would be different for all school districts because the amount of money, the $245.11, is what is the standard, not the 2.5%. To be clear, for us, it's about 2.6%. 6%, and that has been pretty consistent over the life of the revenue cap. So that really creates our ability to spend. For 2005-2006, and that means our revenue cap number is $9,687.08. Let me clarify, because you see quoted, depending on what everybody adds up, a number of per pupil costs for the school district. And the ones you see most quoted go anywhere from $10,800 up to about $11,200. Because we have entitlement grants from the federal government, we have competitive grants that we get from the federal government, and for us that ranges between $6 and $10 million a year that we get competing for. And we have categorical aids from the state and our Madison School Community Recreation that are all outside the revenue cap. And adds up the additional part that gets up to the per pupil cost that you typically see quoted. But under the revenue cap and where the cuts have to occur, the per pupil expenditure for next year is $9,687.08. The year after they did the revenue cap, they passed a qualified economic offer. And the one question that was submitted earlier for me has to do with a qualified economic offer. So let me explain it to you. There was concern in the state legislature that teacher salaries were increasing at a rapid rate. And so part of this, when they did the revenue cap and agreed to two-thirds funding, was that they changed the law relative to the way teachers collectively bargain in the state of Wisconsin. Up until 1994, teachers had the same rights to arbitration in the collective bargaining agreement that everybody else did. In 1994, they passed the qualified economic offer. What the qualified economic offer said was if the school board will offer the union a 3.8% total compensation package, that's salary and benefits, the teachers cannot go to arbitration. But if they don't offer a 3.8%, teachers are entitled to arbitration just like anybody else. Well, what in effect that did was to create a floor under how much your budget's going to go up. Because obviously no self-respecting union in the world is going to take less than 3.8%. Because almost everybody in the state is going above that. And in arbitration, it would be very difficult to prevail. So everybody is going to give at least 3.8%. So the effect of that is to create basically a floor under how much your budget goes up. But if you've been following these numbers, you can begin to see the basic problem of the revenue cap. This is true for all school districts in Wisconsin. It is particularly true if you're in any kind of declining enrollment situation. So if you look, our budget is allowed to go up by 2.6%. Our cost to continue budget, cost to continue means that we do exactly what we're doing right now, next year, with inflation, with what we project is changing these enrollment, those kind of things. Cost to continue budget means we do everything next year that we're doing now. So that's going to go up by at least 3.8%. Obviously, that creates a gap because you don't have enough money every year to do what you've been doing. That creates the situation in which year after year after year, the Madison School District and most school districts in Wisconsin are in a situation where they have to reduce services to stay under that revenue cap. Let me quickly look at our budget overall. Our cost to continue budget was $327 million. Remember, that's taking everything we're doing right now, taking into account what we project our enrollment will be, taking into account what we project utilities will go up, what our salaries and benefits will go up, all of those kind of things, that's what it would cost us to operate exactly like we are. So when you break down our budget sources for next year, our revenue limit is almost $242 million. We have other revenues, which includes categorical aids and some other things that we get from the state that are very specifically targeted to things like special ed and other things, of $52 million. We have, outside the revenue limit, we also have Madison School Community Recreation and our other community services funds, and some grants that we receive is a total of almost $25 million. So the total budget for next year, including all that, is $319 million. That creates a gap that we have to fill with budget reductions, service reductions. That creates a gap of $8.6 million. Again, as I mentioned earlier, boy, we're in trouble. Big trouble. Anyway, this is the gap. The cost to the average property owner for a $205,000 home, if the referendum passes, will be $82 per year. Let me quickly cover referendum question number three. This authorizes the Board of Education to expend $26.2 million over the next 5 years for the maintenance of buildings and the replacement of instructional technology and equipment. 1999, we were paying off a large number of bonds that had debt service that over that period of time added up to about $5 million. In your home, if you pay off your house, you get to keep that money and either upkeep your house or do something else with it. Well, in the case of us on the revenue cap, when we pay off debt, that goes away. And we no longer have it. So this asks the public to give us, to allow us to spend that over the next 5 years. We did that. Those projects are on our website. Feel free to look at those and see what we've accomplished. This asks the public to let us keep that for the next 5 years. Now, with the debt service that's been accumulated, it's about $26.2 million. It will be used for maintenance projects of major systems across the district, and it will also be used to buy instructional equipment and instructional computers. So, that's the questions, and I will stop there.
Thank you, Superintendent. Hello? Here we go. Thank you, Superintendent Rainwater. We did realize that the superintendent was going to have to leave, so when we get to the questions part of this forum, if there are questions that were meant to be asked of the superintendent, we're going to ask them of the school board instead. Next, we're going to move to our advocacy groups, who will each have 5 minutes to explain their positions on the referenda. We're going to start with Arlene Silvera of CARES.
Thank you. My name is Arlene Silvera, and I'm a parent of a seventh-grade daughter at Cherokee Middle School. I'm also a member of Madison Cares. And like the approximately 1,700 citizens who have either endorsed Cares or have planted a yes, yes, yes yard sign at their home, I am a citizen acting responsibly for every student. And tonight, I'd like to tell you why Madison Cares believes that voting yes, yes, yes on May 24th is the right thing for our children and our community. Vote yes for question one, the construction of a second school on the Leopold site. The Leopold attendance area has and continues to grow. In 2000, the Leopold community came together and, working with the Board of Education and the administration, developed a long-range plan to address the overcrowding. The final part of the plan was to go to referendum if the numbers warranted doing so. Well, the numbers are there, the need for a new school is there, the land is there, and the time is now to keep the Leopold community together. By voting yes on question one, the second school will be built on the Leopold campus. There'll be separate schools with separate entrances, names, and principals attached by a shared cafeteria. Like Lapa Marquette, they will focus as paired schools, with the existing building serving K-2 and the new building serving 3-5. At full capacity, each school will house 550 students, far less than Leopold's current population of almost 700 students. And at full capacity, the campus will be comparable to the size of the Hamilton Van Hise complex in the district today. The second school will be built on the Leopold campus for a number of reasons. The two main reasons are, one, cost savings. The land exists, and the land is there and paid for. And second is family support. About 54% of Leopold's population is low income, and about 99% of those families live around the school and walk to school. Transportation is limited to the families, but the parents can walk to and from school to participate as volunteers in meetings with teachers. Older siblings can walk their younger siblings to school, providing safety for the younger ones. Building of the school elsewhere or busing these children will disrupt a well-functioning neighborhood school. So why yes? The need is there, the approach is cost-effective, maintains the involvement of Leopold's low-income families in the school. It avoids disruptive boundary changes for other schools, contributes to the long-term planning for the West Side by relieving capacity issues at other schools, such as Chavez Elementary. It's a community-driven plan that works, and there are no other options. Vote yes on question two, exceeding the revenue caps. The state has put us in the financial situation we are in with the combination of the revenue caps, QEO, and unfunded mandates, as Art explained. Since implementation in 1993, the district has cut $38 million in over 400 positions from the budget. The state has put all school districts in a vice that's continuing to get tighter and tighter until something is done about the funding laws. Through all this, the schools have remained top quality. Madison schools were recently ranked third in the nation, and until that last year, the district was able to keep the cuts out of the classroom. However, we're now at a crossroads. We cannot continue to make cuts to adhere to the state laws without affecting the classroom. Teachers and programs are at risk. The district has made good financial decisions. They are one out of only two school districts in the state with AAA bond rating, showing good financial management. But due to state constraints, we still need to cut the $7.4 million from the budget to maintain the same service budget. So what does voting yes do? It maintains quality programs and services. It provides a rich array of experiences for our students, from advanced courses to athletics to strings. It supports continued progress in reducing the achievement gap. It continues investment in the skills of our teachers and helps keep Madison as a great place to live. Voting yes is an investment in our child's future. We can give them the best education and choices possible so they can exploit their potential and be ready to take their place in a very competitive and challenging world. And vote yes on question 3 to keep our schools safe and functional as positive learning environments. The average school is, I believe, 49 plus years old. Maintenance is needed in our schools as it is in your homes. For the schools feeding into the East High School attendance area, including East, there are almost $7 million of maintenance products required in the next 5 years. Brick tuck pointing at East alone costs $1.7 million. So why yes? We believe our children deserve safe schools and positive learning environments. They deserve instructional equipment that's up to date. It's a minimal cost for a maximum return. So vote yes, yes, yes for our children, our community, and our future. Thank you, Arlene. Next, we'll move on to Kirby Brandt with Get Real.
Thank you. Excuse me. Get Real is the organization that opposed the referendum in June 2003, and it almost went down by about 900 votes. The experience of that period, I think, is why there's so much interest in this referendum. It had been traditionally the case that referenda in Madison greased through. Our funding is popularly broad-based, but it only amounts to about a tenth of what my partner's funding is. They have $33,000 as of the last campaign finance report, of which $18,000 about comes from the teachers' union or a teachers' union entity. Ours is, there was a poll that went around suggesting that our funding came from large corporations. I want to tell you, we don't have one dime from a corporation. And as a matter of fact, we wouldn't legally be able to accept it if it were offered. I'm just going to run down the points that I think are relevant to why people ought to vote no on all three of these referenda. And I'm going to hope that they can be expanded on in the course of questions as we move along, because they're rather briefly stated. Why vote no? The main reason is that Madison schools are already fat. They're fat in terms of staffing, 633 more employees than 10 years ago, even though the number of students has slightly declined in that period. They now spend $117 million a year more than they did 10 years ago. 10 years ago it was about $200 million, now it's about $317 million. If you adjust that for inflation, it's $55 million more than 10 years ago. In point of fact, despite these revenue caps that the Dr. Rainwater told you about, the spending has, in fact, increased at almost double the rate of inflation, somewhat more than the rate of inflation, actually. Without the referenda being passed, spending can climb by the figure that I saw, about $6 million. So the school is not talking, is not being faced with spending cuts. It's being faced with cuts in the ambition for spending. they would still have about 300, according to the way I figured, $323 million to spend, even if the referendum don't pass. The revenue caps that the state instituted were done for a purpose. They are a good thing for the protection of the property taxpayer. It's time for the Madison School Board, Madison School District, to get with the program and plan its spending within those revenue caps, which are certainly capable and, in fact, are done in most school districts. Voters should not be enablers of binge spending, and as I outlined before, that's what has been going on, very high spending without the justification of additional student population. With enrollment down and with the number of schools up over the last 10 years, talk about building another school is frankly idiotic. Salary settlements have been excessive for many years, and that is what's bumped the total spending up against the revenue caps, and has, as Dr. Ringwater indicated, resulted in these referenda, and it's going to happen every year from now on unless the school board gets the message from you. The board has colluded with the union in order to lose the qualified economic offer protection, and what Dr. Ringwater described doesn't really apply in Madison. The referendum disguises the real cost because it leaves out the revenue-sharing component. You actually have to take all the numbers that he mentioned and multiply by 1.6 to find out how much the taxes will actually be when they're collected. The Yes campaign is deceptive in terms of the tax impact. It's $190, not $108, as is often stated. The Yes campaign is exploiting school children in get-out-the-vote campaigns that they're taking home to their parents. The budget does not justify spending requests from a zero base. The same service budget is simply a percentage added on to what was spent the year before, and that percentage is greater than the revenue caps allow. Hence, referenda repeatedly. Thank you.
Thank you, Kirby. Real quick, I'd like to remind audience members to please turn in your question cards if you filled them out, so we can get that part of our program ready. Now we're going to move on to the debate portion of the evening. We've asked both groups to submit three questions in advance. Those questions can be directed at the opposing group, Superintendent Rainwater, or any of the school board members. We're going to start with CARES. They will ask their question, and then the respondent will have 90 seconds to answer. School board members will each get 60 seconds to respond if the question is for them. Then the group that asked the question will have the opportunity to make a 90-second rebuttal. The respondent will then get a 30-second closing statement. We're going to alternate the questions between CARES and Get Real until each group has asked its three questions. So, Arlene, you're going to go first. We want you to, first of all, specify whom the question is for. We're also going to ask you to stand up for this because some folks in the back said they couldn't see.
Our first question is for Get Real, and it deals with the first question on the referendum. If a second school is not built on the Leopold campus, how and where would you find space for the children who cannot be accommodated in the existing school?
In the first place, I doubt that the crowding is as acute as has been suggested. But in any case, whatever it is, the way to do it is to balance out the use of facilities throughout the district, and if necessary, that's done by busing.
I certainly disagree with your first statement. As a Leopold parent for 6 years, I have lived through the overcrowding. I've had my child tested in closets. I've had classrooms in the halls. Walk through the school. It doesn't take much to see the situation that the school is in. It's there in front of you. Secondly, we have looked with the board and the administration at numerous options. There is space in elementary schools in the district. That is true. However, it's on the north and east side of the district. It is not where the children are. So looking at busing options, which have been done, it would result in very, very long bus rides, up to an hour both ways, for children of Leopold to be bused to the open spaces in the district. We do not see that as feasible for the children or economically feasible as well. It does not solve the problem.
Okay, Kirby, you have 30 seconds.
I have nothing more to say.
More to say? Okay. Next, Kirby and Get Real has a question for CARES. And if you can stand up, please, the people in the back really appreciate that.
Okay, given that there has, this is for CARES, just a reminder, given that there has been no increase in enrollment, how do you justify an increase of 633 in district staff and an increase of $117 million in the school district's annual spending between the school years 94-95 and 2004-05? Please be specific as to amounts.
Okay, Arlene, you've got 90 seconds to respond.
Okay, thank you. First, I'd like to address the staff issue. I think you have to separate staff issue into the staff that is mandated by federal or state laws versus staff that is not. So if you look at state laws, you have definite needs for SAGE. SAGE is a great program. Decreases class size, increases staff. Special ed, English language learners. I read today that English language learners increased from 973 to 3,330 since 1995. Special ed children increased from 3,130 to 4,264 since 1995. And low income in the district increased from 6,063 to 9,120. That all requires staff. And special ed, English language learners, and SAGE are all mandated staff. If you look at the teachers in the areas that are not mandated by law, there have been cuts in the staff. I don't know the specific number, and I would have to defer to the superintendent for that number. Secondly, when you look at the amount of spending, well, first of all, everything has increased since that amount of time. But again, you have to go back to the demographics of the district. With the number of special needs children, English language learners, and low income increasing in the district, we see an increase in the needs for budgets, staff, and support in order to maintain the education that is mandated for these children.
Okay, Kirby, you've got 90 seconds to respond, Harley.
Okay, could you tell us how long SAGE has been in effect and what staff have been assigned to that program? Same thing for the English as a second language and bilingual education. The things that you said are responsible for this increase in staff. I'd like to know how many and for how long. My suggestion is that SAGE has been in effect since before 1994.
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
SAGE went into effect in 2001,
okay.
I believe.
Just, anyway, that's what I like are the specifics that I ask. Let these things break down to. I will mention that the licensed instructional staff has increased by about 300 or more. Admin has increased by about 25, and support staff by about 300. That's what that 633 is made up of.
Can you get 30 seconds to respond?
SAGE went into the district in the year 2000 and 2001. I cannot answer the specifics on what the administrative staff was or the support staff. Again, I would have to defer to the superintendent or someone on the school board to answer that specific question. Am I allowed to do that?
Yes, you're allowed to do that.
Thank you.
A school board member or Senator Rainwater would have 60 seconds to answer that.
The say these numbers aren't going to be exact. I mean, obviously, I didn't memorize them before I left, but I believe the total increase between SAGE, the special ed increase that's required by the increase in our special ed population, and the dramatic increase in the ESL population amounts to about 450 total staff, not the 300 that you mentioned. And that comes directly from our books. I don't know if it's around 450 for those three. Special education also requires, as you increase population, also requires an increase in educational assistant hours. I know that since the year 2000, our administrative staff has decreased by 9 full positions across the district. Our central office administrative staff has decreased by about 13 positions. So that's the numbers that I know. So about 450 in terms of staff to those three programs.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayweather. Now, CARES has got another question for Get Real, and you have 30 seconds to pose that question.
The district has many maintenance needs, including roofing at Mendota Elementary, electrical lighting and ceiling at Sandberg Elementary, and brick tuck pointing at East. How do you propose to fund these needs in the basic maintenance needs of the district?
I just think that there's room in the amount of spending that is undertaken for general maintenance. The problems that you cite really shouldn't exist, considering that the district has had successive maintenance referenda, the last one from 1999 still being in effect, and should have covered those things. It makes me wonder whether the district actually spends the money that it gets through referenda on the projects that it claims to need it for. And therefore is another question or makes questionable any kind of support for another referendum of the same kind.
Arlene, you can respond to that.
As the superintendent said earlier, you can look on the district's webpage and see where the money for the last maintenance referendum has been spent and on what projects. The new projects are also listed. I think the easiest way to relate to this is think of yourself as a homeowner. Yes, you repair your roof, but your roof is going to need replacement again. Your furnace is going to go. Things need continual maintenance. In the schools, for example, just to replace roofs on a 25-year cycle, it costs between $800,000 and $1 million a year. The schools are older. They need constant upkeep.
Kirby, you have 30 seconds if you would like to respond to that. Okay. Get Real has another question for any board member who wishes to answer.
Salary settlements higher than budgets as constrained by the revenue cap that caused this problem. And if you wouldn't mind, to the best of your recollection, state what those percentages in increase are.
It's been on an average, as I recall, of about 4.2%. 4.2. Second of all, as an old union person, I can tell you if you go to the QEO and give the minimum 3.8%, you will go to arbitration. And as an old union person, I can tell you that you will lose that arbitration. So it's fiscally sound to not give the minimum, which is required by law to avoid arbitration. The Get Real folks always ignore the law. And second of all, what was your next question? There was a second question. But did I answer all your questions?
Well, no, that basically answers it. I have a follow-up question.
Good.
Why would not the 3.8% offer prevent arbitration? Isn't that the point of the qualified economic offer? That's number one. And number two, does the qualified economic offer apply in this school district, or has it been bargained away?
Well, first of all, it certainly does apply. You don't bargain away through a law like that. All right, now getting back to the 3.8, why is it more? Because the local districts, in fact, most of the districts throughout the state are offering about 4.1, 4.2 in order to remain competitive. In addition, the rising health insurance costs are guaranteeing that that is absolutely necessary. And as an old union person, I can tell you that we were all often offered the money, say, how do you want to divide it up, health insurance or income? Well, we felt that health insurance was the safest route to go. Anybody speaking to the health insurance, being Cadillac plan, et cetera, is speaking to something that's quite irrelevant. It's a lump sum of money. It's the teachers dividing it up the way they want to divide it up.
You know, if any other board member wants to jump in on this and give their opinion, we would certainly welcome that also. Okay. Okay, the next question is going to be from CARES for Get Real.
You would vote no on question two. So what specific programs and positions would you reduce to reach the $8.6 million gap and keep the district under the revenue caps?
I can't offer specific programs. That's the job of the school board. It's a job that they haven't been doing. They need to look at everything that's spent and what it's spent on and determine where savings can be made. Obviously, I haven't been privy to that sort of thing. Unfortunately, neither has the school board, and that's the problem, but there should be.
Okay, Arlene, you can respond to that.
Well, I find it difficult when you say no to something, but there's no alternative. And then you say you don't know what goes on behind that or what the numbers are behind that. I think the school board has been cutting. I mean, if you've seen the paper, there's been a number of meetings recently in which they're going through issues, listening to the public, and making the tough cuts needed to hit the revenue cap. Not an easy process, but something that they are doing.
Do you care to respond? Okay, thank you. Now, Get Real has one last question that I believe was intended for Superintendent Rainwater, although some school board members may also care to weigh in on this.
Yes, I think probably that'd be the way, because the question's sort of been overtaken by later discussion. The question is, please explain the QEO and how it is relevant to Madison Metropolitan School District teacher salary negotiations. It's the second part of that question that's really of interest. I understand that the qualified economic offer forms, or let's put it this way, the forms that are necessary to secure the right to a qualified economic offer protection have not been filed with the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission. That being the case, the qualified economic offer would not be available as a protection in the event that the negotiations with the teachers' union resulted in a request for arbitration. That's my understanding.
Let me clarify the understanding. First of all, you don't file for the qualified economic offer until you reach an impasse in the negotiations. At that point in time, the board doesn't file a form for the qualified economic offer before they begin bargaining. You always bargain in good faith at the beginning, and then you file for the qualified economic offer. After the strike in 1997, in which our district held firm for quite a period of time, to be honest, much to the chagrin of many people in our community, and we had a teacher strike that year, and we finally settled. For the next negotiations, we agreed to what's called an impasse resolution procedure. That impasse resolution procedure protects the district from any job actions at all by our union. In exchange for that, we agreed that we would go to arbitration if we could not settle. Built within that impasse resolution procedure are hurdles to going to arbitration for each one of us that makes it to our advantage, both sides, to reach a mutual agreement. Because the things that we can take to arbitration under the impasse resolution procedure limit both of us to the point that it would be to neither of our advantages to go. We have settled the contract at 4.2% for the last three contracts. So it's worked for us. Thank you.
Feel free to respond to that.
So is it true to boil it down to say that you gave away the right to the qualified economic offer protection in order to settle a strike which was itself illegal?
Let me say that I'm somewhat of a disadvantage here because I really and truly cannot engage in debate in this case. We did not give away anything in the teacher strike negotiation. We agreed to what we believe and what is proven to be a way to settle our contracts with our union in a way that has benefited both the taxpayer and our employees. So I don't believe giveaway is the correct term or the factual term.
Thank you. We appreciate your candid answers and back and forth. And I think this really helps the citizens. Before we move on to our public statements, I'd like to introduce everyone to Vernon Blackwell. Vernon is a member of the Northside PTO Coalition and also a member of the Northside Planning Council.
Thank you, David. As David stated earlier, the Northside Parent Teacher Coalition and the Northside Planning Council are two nonpartisan organizations. The Northside Parent Teacher Organization has worked diligently on focusing on issues related to resource allocation in the Madison Metropolitan School District. The reason why is because we know this is for the health of our community. The way the district allocates resources, for better or for worse, will have an impact on our community. The same is true for budget cuts. One of the things the Northside Parent Teacher Coalition has worked on is trying to preserve an allocation structure that actually will benefit, that will keep from having adverse effects on schools with a large number of economically disadvantaged students and families who are struggling. We pose a question to our board members and our panelists. I ask that you please listen carefully and that you respond yes or no. First, to Ruth Robards. Well, let's start with Mr. Winston. Mr. Winston, if further cuts are required, will you commit to working with the community to try to protect smaller class sizes and programs at the highest need schools, even if that means raising class sizes at schools with lower poverty levels? Yes or no?
Please repeat the question.
If further budget cuts are required, will you commit to working with the community?
No.
Mr. Lopez, Ms. Cupsa.
Yes.
Mr. Keyes,
no.
Ms. Carstensen.
Of course I'll work with the community. I really think...
That's a yes?
Yes. But I also want to say these are not yes and no questions are easy.
Superintendent Art Rainwater.
I don't make that decision. I mean, I don't make that decision.
Can't abstain.
Yes, all
right, I understand.
I'm the boy in the school district.
I make recommendations.
Okay, I'll put defer. Get real. Yes or no?
Oh, same question. sir.
Yes, that's correct.
No.
Ms. Severa from CARES.
I first want to clarify, I'm speaking on for myself. I cannot speak on behalf of CARES. We have not had this discussion. So my personal answer would be no.
And we're looking for a response from CARES.
We have not had that discussion. I do not know the opinion of the group on that.
Okay, thank you, Vernon. And this is meant specifically for comments and not for questions yet. If you've already registered, we'll call your name. Please come up to the microphone. You'll have 2 minutes for your statement.
Speaking. I filled out a little brochure to let them know I was here, and I told them if there's something that hasn't been said that I really thought needed to be said, that I would love to speak. However, with those questions, what they told me, I'm home on. The schools on the north side, every one of them is considered a school that has a high rate of poverty. Mendota School has 74%. Maybe the reasons when I see the no's is one of the reasons that we have a budget that is out of control. If you're doing the same services and you have a limited amount of money and you're not acknowledging that some of the schools need a lot more help than others, that's a mistake. And I'm going to tell you, we're here tonight, anyhow I can tell you where I'm coming from, is that we want good schools, but we do not want taxpayers' dollars wasted. I don't know if they're being wasted. I haven't seen what you're planning on spending the $26 million on in the next 5 years. We hear there's going to be a maintenance and computers. And then I see East High School that actually should be red-tagged, in my opinion, by the city, and it hasn't been. And I would have been ashamed to put that on TV after you've had all this money all these years. And Mr. Reedwater, you said that you couldn't answer that question because you deferred it to the school board. Well, what I think, and I don't know what other people in this room think, I think that the school board is almost a rubber stamp. And that concerns me. I told Juan Lopez that last year. I said, Juan, if I were on that school board, the first thing I would do is put some money in that budget in order to have somebody that worked for the school board like the council office has. And they give us the numbers, and they get all the facts we wanted, and they looked at budgets, and they helped us. And also, I've been told that you don't have a capital budget. How come? I can't believe that. And when you go and you do the administration contracts in January without having the money in the budget, you know you didn't have them, I mean, hands are tied now. And now I'm told there's 10 seconds. You guys, I didn't have anything to say, but I can go on. I can go on.
Organizers for hosting the event, but now I discovered this is kind of a tough part of town. Maybe I just make my statement split. But no yes or no answers, please. That's tough. I stand in support of the Madison Public Schools and yes votes on the three referenda items. I could speak very comfortably, I think, on each of those items. I could speak comfortably on the performance of the Madison Public Schools over the last number of years that I've been a resident of this community, and our three children have attended the schools. I could speak comfortably, I think, about the interdependencies of intergovernmental relationships as they pertain to the presence of high-quality, functioning public schools. But that is really not where my passion is tonight, and hasn't been there for a while. My problem is that I don't think this is about education. In one very important sense of the term. I believe this is about public sector institutions. And I really believe that what we're looking at here is a local example of a national effort that has been undertaken for a number of years to diminish and to denigrate public institutions. And the strategies, in this instance, pick the jewel in the crown. Pick the Madison Public Schools, and apply the strategy that is applied nationwide, which is simply to lead those institutions dry. Cut, sever that artery. That's revenues. You cannot run a public institution without revenues. So, therefore, lower taxes. So, therefore, underfund absolute mandates made by the federal level and the state level. So, therefore, impose revenue caps. It's an insidious strategy, and it can work. That's the problem. I believe, on observation, the local board of education is conflicted. I believe, on observation, that the state legislature is not functioning. And I believe, after observation as well, that the governor of the state has missed opportunity after opportunity to exercise initiative on behalf of public schools in the state. That's got to stop. I think what we have is leaders looking for someone to follow. So that is my admonition to you. Stand up, talk to your neighbors, get on the phone, go to the voting place on the 24th. Vote yes, and once again, vote yes. Give our elected leadership an opportunity to observe where this community really stands with respect to the importance of our most treasured public institution, our public schools. Thanks.